Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hey, Guru Nation, welcome back to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. So we've got a Colombia theme going on, all right? We got Dr. Perez. He's living in Florida. He's been in the research industry for about 26 years. He has a very interesting story, and there's a lot of business applications there. Because Dr. Perez, I'm not sure if you know, but there's a lot of people watching that want to start their own sites, their own CROs, their own businesses in this space. And they're sick of hearing from me all the time. I need to bring on guests like you, like Monica. And then with Monica, she's here because she works. She's a site director at one of my sites, but the Columbia Connection. Thought she would be good to be in on this interview also. So first of all, give us a little background on what you're currently doing, and then we'll backtrack on your career. Okay.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, thank you, Dan, and thank you, Monica, for this great opportunity. I really, I've been tracking you guys for a long time. I think, Dan, first of all, you know, the content matter that you bring to the people, I think it's phenomenal. I think it adds so much value to everyone. I think everybody from the novices to the newcomers into our industry, as well as the ones who are just on their course, as well as the ones that are well at their peak and seasoned, can all appreciate and enjoy a lot of the talks that you present, and consistently. I mean, I don't think you miss a day. And I, some of us wake up watching you, and some of us go to sleep watching you.
Yes, so. I love this. Thank you, Doctor. I appreciate that. The plan is working. The plan is working. Thank you. Yeah, no. All joking aside, I appreciate it. So, what are you currently doing? And then we'll backtrack.
Sure, absolutely. So right now I am the president, founder, and CEO of my own company that's been around for about 7 years. It's called GCP Research. Quite interesting. Everybody thinks GCP is referring back to my name because of my initials, GCP, Gualberto C. Perez, and it's not. Other people think it goes back to GCP because of good clinical practices, which I feel very proud of, because that should be the backbone of our industry and everything that we do and we breathe every single day. So that's phenomenal that name fell in there. But it truly stands for Global Clinical Professionals. And the reason for that is, if you look at our website, we do have people, and by the way, it hasn't been updated in quite some time. We have new addresses and new things going on. I'm going to be working on that. We have people around the world. We have people in Bogota, Colombia. We have people in Barranquilla, Colombia. We have people in Nicaragua. We have people in different parts of the United States. And there's other folks that haven't been updated yet that we do have in places like Argentina and Brazil, and also as far out as India. That we have a lot of very talented people that are contributors to this industry, whether they are physicians or nurses or coordinators or biostatisticians or PK scientists, that bring a great deal of light to what we do to really make it a full circle. And I think that's, you know, that makes it exciting. So that's where I sit right now. But in addition to that, I am also working with an orthotics company, and I am the CEO and the chief scientific officer for the orthotics company. So we're filing for a 510K submission We'll be working on that. We've been working on that for about 3 years, and it's actually a product that's been around for a really, really long time. I'm not going to disclose it here for multiple reasons and propaganda reasons. So, but that's another thing that I'm doing right now, and it's very exciting working with neurologists, with podiatrists, and working measuring flow of the feet to see what the irrigation is, as well as neuropathy and plantar fasciitis and things of that nature. So a little bit of a mix there between device work as well as crossovers between drugs and drug and devices. Quite a bit of a challenge sometimes in terms of how you're going to submit it. That's what I'm doing right now. Keeps me quite busy. And right now I'm transferring the site from Miami, where I had been for a long time, doing a lot of COPD work, rheumatoid arthritis, and asthma, children studies, and some flu vaccine studies, some of the things that we've done the most. And right now we're bringing it to beautiful St. Petersburg, because this is now where I'm located. I've been here for now 4 years. I'm honored to say I came here because of a large research company that has been around for like 67 years. So it was really nice to step foot into something.
67? Wow.
Yes, that company's been around for 67 years. And
they're
I was
that
the president.
Old? That's crazy.
Yeah. And they actually, a lot of the people worked there very closely with the agency on getting things started. I mean, these guys originally started like out of a trailer home, and they did a lot of little animal studies. And then from there, they went to doing device studies and personal health care. Everything that you've heard about personal health care basically means studying anything that any one of us has on our bodies, from the lipstick to the cologne to the perfume to the deodorant to the antiperspirants.
These are the kind of studies I want to get into. We were talking about that before. You'd be interested in that. My wife would be interested in that as well. So I guess we'll talk about your career as well, but how does one get into that kind of space? Let's say someone that's been doing research for a long time, like myself, how do they get into that space?
You know, if you really look at pharmaceutical companies, they all have subdivisions, right? I mean, some of them are divided by systems, some of them are divided by drug classification, some, you know, without mentioning, there's a couple that basically look at it and say, okay, this is our cardiovascular, this is our antibiotic division. And they also have, just about every one of them, all the big ones, they all have a subdivision called personal health care. And that's where a lot of the OTC products are there.
So we got to get involved with those people.
That's exactly how you approach them. And the other thing is really to have the expertise. The expertise are not easy to gain because there's only about four or five players in that domain that have been around for some time. So it requires some really special type of skill set to get into. But definitely it's acquirable, and it's definitely out there in the industry. I mean, as we know, I mean, everything starts from something, and there's certainly an enormous amount of talent that's definitely willing to go in that direction. It is a less lucrative from a financial standpoint type of situation. But you study a lot of things. You can study anything from sandals, insoles for your feet. You know, speak of companies like Dr. Scholl's, for example. They also have to do studies. A lot of these studies are not formal submissions to the FDA, but what these studies really do is that they're claim studies. So if you want to make a claim to say that your lipstick stays on longer than the other guys, when you see these commercials on television, you need to prove it. And you need someone to design a study protocol that has specific endpoints. It still goes through biostatistics. And then at the end of the day, it's determined what the coefficient of variation and the confidence interval for that particular
trial.
And
those don't go to the FDA? You don't have to send that to the FDA?
You don't necessarily have to submit them to the FDA.
But you have to send it to a peer-reviewed publication?
You can send them to a peer review publication, and once you have the data that's been done, a lot of the data sometimes is objective data that can be done by measurable conditions that have their differences. You measure, let's say, if you're going to that's what we call 12, transepithelial water loss. So the transepithelial water loss gets studied by this. And there's a lot of very, very interesting things that we do, and we also do focus groups.
Wow.
after this call, doctor, if you have time, you and Monica, let's get something set up. All right, how easy is this to do? Is it involves some finagling with these sponsors that you have relationships with?
You know, you have to be knowledgeable, you have to be tactful, you have to have the right approach, and you have to have certainly the chemistry with the folks out there to be able to reach them. So I think it's basically the same thing. That is a very, very, very standard type of thing. But definitely the work is out there, and it all needs to be done. It all needs to be analyzed, and it's very valuable work. It's meaningful research because there are things that we use every day, and we want to make sure if the powder that we're using is working better than, you know, another brand. Mm-hmm. So there's studies that are definitely meaningful and they're important. So those are things that need to be done.
All right. So let's get into how did you get started? Because I did a podcast with Monica on this when she was a year into clinical research. So everyone's curious, how does one get started in clinical research? I got in by accident. Monica kind of by accident too, right? So how did you get started? By accident also?
Well, there was a laboratory down in South America called Pasteur Laboratories. Not an uncommon name for a lab, right? And this gentleman, his name was Abello Lovo. He was he had just about every title you can imagine. This man was a genius. And he happened to live about two houses down from where I used to live in college. And he had an enormous library inside his home. And he was a professor at another university. And incidentally, one day we met. And so we started doing some work on human papillomavirus. And he showed me all the literature that he had. And we started talking about it. And then I met another great friend of mine who's an OBGYN. And we started doing colposcopies. And we started compiling data. And then Carlos Cure, who's probably one of the men who has the most NDA submissions in all of Latin America, was one of my professors in endocrinology. You might know him.
You know him?
What was his name? Again?
Carlos Cure.
Okay.
Okay, so
LinkedIn request later.
So with him, we started doing out of his office pretty much a retrospective study, right? And we started compiling measurements of T3 and T4 and TSH and trying to get a relationship, being that this gentleman was a great professor, a very excellent clinician, a world-renowned researcher with a lot of advocacy and acumen towards data. And we were able to get that all together and get that study going. And I was like, wow, you know, I really like this stuff. And so I did that and a couple of other little things at the academic level. So when I came to the University of Miami, I guess a great friend of mine, who's also one of the greatest PIs you can ever imagine here in the United States, he is a board certified internist and geriatrician, Dr. Ernesto Fuentes, said to me, hey, you need some money, don't you? I'm like, you know, well, don't we all? I mean, when we're in school like that. And he said, well, there's this place with this guy that he has this research clinic and he needs, you know, doctors that are training and stuff and to help out with the research. So I jumped on it. I went and basically got hired like the same day. He wanted me to stay. And I said, I can't. I'm on call. And he said, well, can you come tomorrow? I said, no, I'll be tired. It's, you know. So 2 days later, we got started. And this man basically became, he was the guru as far as I was concerned. And he became my mentor. And beautifully enough, he would come in late in the evenings and open up Harrison's Internal Medicine and the protocols, and we would review from the medicine what we were actually going to be executing in that clinical trial. Mm-hmm. So now you have the best of both worlds. You know, you got the pharma options, you got the medications, you got the environment, you got this guy who's an MD, PhD from Duke University, who's phenomenal, and I love him very much because he opened up this avenue for me in my career. And I'm forever grateful. And I just fell in love with it. And I guess within a couple of years later, I became director of special populations. And I thought, if we can do some of these studies directly in patients in diabetes, and that was the big thing. I mean, we probably worked on every single diabetic product you can imagine out there, from injectables with insulin for type 1 and type 2s. We even worked on the CGMSs, the continuous glucose monitoring systems, for determining interstitial fluid. To indirectly measure and test for glucose and get those curves that today, I think those machines are like on their seventh or maybe 10th version, some of them.
So because Monica's taking notes now, which actually is something I should probably do when I interview people. but who was the first guy? Oh, you got
Carlos
him already? Carlos Cure. Yeah. Cure. He's got a great name for a doctor. Cure.
Yeah.
Double cure.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, if you ran into him, he just looks the part. He just looks like that scientist guy.
And so he's still active?
I kept in I think he's still, oh yeah, he's still around, I'm sure. The last I remember was like 4 or 5 years ago. We looked him up for something and we realized how many NDAs he had, and we're like, we were blown away. But yeah, definitely a huge asset to our research community and to the medical community at large.
So. Okay. So you got started in with that. What was the name of the
Ernesto, the older doctor?
Dr. Fuentes, yes.
Dr. Fuentes.
No, he wasn't the older doctor. He was young. He was just about my age, and we were both about the same age.
Wow, and okay.
So, yeah, so he was a resident at the university at the time when we got involved. And he was the one that oriented me towards that. And, of course, my passion and my love and desire to do research was all there. And the necessity to make a few bucks was there as well. So everything fell into place.
And then what happened after? So you got started, I'm assuming, as a study coordinator or a research assistant of some sort, or what did you do?
Yeah, I was actually, they called it different things. You know, we went everything from project management to study coordination and so on and so forth. And of course, I wanted to get something more structured. So I became member of a lot of the associations. I started at that point going to the DIA meetings, to the ACRP. I went into the ACRP very early. I think I might have been a member of them for 20 years now. And I was with SOCRA for some time. I don't think there were people out there that were just real special people that knew how to do research and stuff like that. And then
SOCRA, I guess Society of Clinical Research Associates?
That's correct.
Okay. Are you still involved?
I am still a little bit involved. In fact, I just got an email a few minutes ago from Dr. Pierce. He wanted me to go over to Orlando because he did a presentation this week. And Dr. Pierce and I stay very close. And we've done some stuff together, and we're now going to be doing a presentation that we're preparing.
What's the benefit of SOCRA membership for, I mean, first of all, because I've never been a member of anything, I don't think, in this industry. I think I was DIA once. But
I think we did this one.
SOCRA? No, we did another thing, but this is Society of Clinical Research Associates, right? Mm-hmm. SOCRA? We did another one. But so what's the benefits? Like, who can join? Why should they join? I get people watching asking me all the time, and I tell them, look, I don't think it's necessary because I don't have that. I've been doing this for 12 years, but maybe I'm wrong, right?
Well, you know what I think first of all, the networking is phenomenal. You know, you get to share with people things that you might have not. You know, the beauty of research for me is that every protocol is different. Every time you run a study and the experience that you have on the West Coast versus the ones we've had here, be it for ambience, be it for culture, be it for metabolic differentiations of people with cytochrome P450s and how they metabolize different drugs, you might have more Asians over there than us. I mean, all of these things bring on a different constellation, a different perspective, and it's always very nice to listen to people. We should listen twice as what we speak, right? And at least that's a cliche some people bring out, but I think it's very true. I think it's the best way for me to show anybody that I respect. So, you know, I tell everybody that the way I basically run the businesses or a department or a trial or whatever it is that I'm trying to do in life, and it holds true not just at the business level but just in general, I tell everyone, I say this in a lot of my chats, I say, you know, I'm tough on the facts, but I'm very gentle on the people. You know, I'm tough on the facts, but very gentle on the people. And I think
that's my next Instagram quote.
It's really good.
Tough on the facts, gentle on the people. Huh.
Yeah. And you know, I like to start a lot of the chats with that because some people ask me, well, what do I do to get a successful phase one unit? You have to create the right team. And the way to create the right team is, of course, credentials. But I think attitude and attitude works in both directions on how you train your people to make sure that you have the best sites possible. It's really about the people, guys. This is more of a service business than it is a product business. We're not selling a product.
Yeah, we tell clients all the time your biggest expense is going to be your people, your staff, right? So that's the way it's going to be. Okay, you got started. How did you climb the ladder? Like, what did you do? What happened next after your stint with the university, right?
You know, it's funny, Dan. I've been blessed, and I always tell everybody, I've never asked for a raise, and I've never asked for a promotion. People have always given them to me. They've come to me, and they've seen my ethics, my work ethic, my dedication, my love. And, you know, like as an executive, a lot of people you read, you know, the word love is like a curse word for some executives. Hmm. I don't believe in that. I think that four-letter word has given me a lot of success. It's
So you never asked?
That comes,
You've never asked? Like, hey, I've been doing this for a while. I've been doing a good job. I want to now do
this. I always tell my students or people who ask me for advice, you know, you're never going to climb if you don't ask. Now, in some places, that's not the case. Like, usually in smaller places, you'll be promoted without asking. But in bigger, like the CROs, you kind of get lost in the mix. And so, in your case, were you working at larger organizations, or were they like small, medium-sized companies?
Well, if you look at this thing behind me here, I was one of the original five founders. We started with five people, and the next thing we knew, we were over 400 employees. So really, wow. Yeah, I think our leaders stepped up to bat, you know, and I think every one of us, we realized where the needs were, and we also realized where the hiccups were. I mean, let's face it, it's a bumpy road, guys, to success, you know, I mean, and sometimes you run into glitches, you run into situations, and you run into situations with everything from equipment to personnel to recruiting issues. But you have to figure out a way. You know, you have to be savvy, you have to be sassy at times, and you have to be creative, you have to be very innovative.
What do you recommend to someone that's just starting out that eventually, you know, wants to climb the corporate ladder, but at some point even experiment with owning their own research site or their own CRO or their own company in this industry? Where should they start? I just tell them, you just need to get started somewhere. Just get started, get the experience, and then you'll figure it out from there. So what do you suggest?
Get started by opening up your own site. I think it's a little bit of a risk and a little bit of a challenge. I mean, there's a lot of caveats to our industry, to our profession, and to this particular part of the business. So if you are going to get started, what is it that you really want to do? I mean, probably if we're looking at expenses, you're doing late phase is probably the easiest way and the cheapest way, right? If you're going to open up a site, and you're still going to need, if you want to do something pristine, you know, you want to know that you have the right square footage, that you're going to have the right pharmacy division, that you're going to have the right coordinators. And the other one that I find, and this is true not just for our industry and our business, but in many other things that I have helped to coach and where I've been part of the advisory boards, there's many businesses where people don't fund them correctly. And what they do is then they find themselves that just 6 months down the road, they can't go on. And, you know, the average business, it takes quite a bit of time to turn it around. And I think we are in an industry of credibility. We are an industry of networking and relationships. And if you don't have a name for yourself and people don't know who you are and they haven't experienced your contribution to their success to a certain degree or to their trial, then there's a good chance that they're not going to believe in you. And so I think the credibility has to be there. And I think it's a test of time. And I think sometimes it means starting out in an institution that's already established until you get to know the ropes as well. And the other problem is that I find is that this is an ever-changing industry. You know, this is not the same industry that I started in 1992. This is a totally different industry. You know, I told you before about, you know, flying to Puerto Rico and bringing back a plane with patients. You can't do that today.
So, Dr. Perez, thank you for sharing, you know, just the basics. We're going to do a part two for sure because we've had some connection issues. But how somebody can get started, work their way up, if that's what they want to do. If not, I know many people are happy just being CRAs for their entire career, and that's it, right? But if that's not you, and you're looking at business, and you're looking at climbing the corporate ladder, or you're looking at just creating more opportunities for yourself, this is definitely a person you want to connect with. Dr. Perez, where can people reach you? So what was it again, your contact info?
G for my first letter for Gualberto, that's my first name, G Perez, P-E-R-E-Z, Z as in zebra, at researchgcp.com.
Researchgcp.com, and that's the URL. Thank you very much. We're definitely going to talk some more, and we're going to do a part two. I really appreciate it, and thank you all for watching and listening. Thank you, Monica. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And we'll talk business, Dr. Perez. Thank you very much. So hey, everybody, thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.